This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
You've kind of gotten it all on opening day here on Jones
wow.
and Keefe.
What a day. What a time.
Dong pool draft is in the books.
Yep.
MLB season predictions are in the books. You even got a Ruby De La Rosa mention.
Why not?
Lots of good stuff going on here today on Jones and Keefe. Random baseball player returns in the grab bag. People excited for that.
People are excited.
We will preview the Red Sox season in just 60 seconds. Keefe will give you a 60-second preview. I'll give you a 60-second preview when we go on the clock at high noon. And joining us right now for his weekly visit with Jones and Keefe is Rob Bradford of WEEI and the Baseball Isn't Boring podcast, a friend of Tyler O'Neill.
That's right.
He's brought to you by McFarland Energy, the heating, cooling, and bioheat delivery pros that Eastern Mass and all of Cape Cod depend on at McFarlandEnergy.com, by the E.L. Harvey companies, including Nauset Disposal and Miga Disposal, your local trash collection and recycling providers, and by Aviva Trattoria, Italian-inspired, locally made from fresh, whole, locally sourced ingredients. Rob Bradford, how you doing on opening day?
Oh, McFarland. All it's missing is an Alan Webster reference, right?
Yeah,
if you're going to have Ruby
nice.
De La Rosa, you have to get an Alan Webster reference. Yeah, so happy opening day. It just hits different, doesn't it?
It does. Really, it really, really, really does hit different. People are bullish on the Red Sox, ESPN, MLB.com, Keith's nemesis Keith Law. Do you think people are it's getting away from them a little bit on the Red Sox? Three of us on this show have them in the World Series. Billy has them winning it. We all have them winning the division. Like, has it gotten a little carried away?
Alex Bregman's going to hit a home run today, according to Rich Heath.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That is
yeah,
true.
That's a good bet.
It's all coming together. It's all coming together. Yeah, I mean, I think that by the way they've landed in spring training, because in part because all these other teams have had so many things go bad poorly, and the Red Sox have had just enough stuff not go poorly, I think it has worked out for them, and that's where they've landed. I mean, I think I don't think it's unreasonable to think they're going to win this division off of what talent they have right now.
And I think one of the main reasons people are picking them is the guy starting today, Garrett Crochet. And do you think the contract thing is going to be an issue at times this year, or are they going to really be able to sort of put it to the side and just have him go out and pitch all year?
Yeah, I mean, he, as you guys know, today was D-Day. He's not talking beyond once today starts, so we assume that they're not talking. I mean, as we saw with Alex Cora, that changed last year. It can always change. But I think the biggest thing is that he's got another year, right? So he's got another year. He's got this year to prove himself, to prove that he's right in holding out or to going for the big-ticket item when it comes to the contract. And then you know, the fact is that maybe he gets through this year and they pay more. But as we said before, I think it's – oh, look at this. You hear my GPS?
Yeah, we absolutely hear it, yeah.
I'm headed to the park, so
nice. Do you need directions there?
Not from this location.
Got it.
But I think the fact is that both sides, we know the motivation with this is, on both sides, it's a little bit off the beaten track. You have a situation with the Red Sox. They can hold out and they can see if it's worth paying more money. And for Garrett Crochet, he can hold out and say, hey, you know what? I want to be the biggest contract in all of pitching in baseball. So this doesn't surprise me we've gotten to this point.
I want to ask you about another pitcher the Red Sox were in on this offseason. You tweeted yesterday, according to a source, Nathan Eovaldi's decision this offseason came down to the Red Sox and the Rangers. There were six legit suitors. I'm curious, if he chose the Red Sox, would they still have been in on Walker Buehler? Would they still have been in on Garrett Crochet? If Eovaldi chose the Red Sox, how would that have changed their approach?
I think it was the Buehler spot, not the Crochet spot. And if you look at it, it sort of fills the same bucket, right? The veteran guy, the guy who they know isn't going to wilt in the postseason, the guy who is going to be a good influence in the clubhouse. Like, all those boxes are checked. But, you know, according to what I heard yesterday, that it really did come down to the Red Sox and Rangers. There were six legitimate teams interested. And it begs the question, you know, which would you rather have, Eovaldi or Buehler? I think it's a pretty good debate. But I can see why. And that's why he got his deal, right? That's why he got his 3-year deal with the Rangers. I'm sure that's put him over the top. But I think that you could see what they were going for, and I like the fact that they were identifying those sort of guys. I like the fact that they were identifying Eovaldi, because it shows you they're not obsessed. Remember the John Henry? Oh, you can't be 30 years old and give a guy a contract. They're not obsessed with that. They're obsessed with, okay, this guy can be good in the clubhouse. He's a good pitcher. He can help us win a postseason game, and that's what Eovaldi can do.
Yeah, we heard Alex Cora yesterday talking about Devers is the DH and Bregman is the third baseman. That's sort of been the chatter over the last couple of weeks, and whether Devers loves it or not, that's sort of the reality. I guess the next layer down from that is last year's DH was Masataka Yoshida. What do you think ends up happening with him?
I would love to tell you that we've done the Venn diagrams. We've done the beautiful mind in the window, and we're trying to figure this out. And it is just, there's no path for Masa Yoshida to be an integral part of this team if Rafael Devers is where he is right now, which we assume he is. He's going to be the everyday DH. They can talk all they want about Masa Yoshida is going to get his arm back. He's going to be throwing. He's going to be in the field. Well, you know, there's a reason why he didn't play in the field at all last year with what a perceived fine arm. And that's because they don't think he can field. They want a good defensive team. And so every time that they say something nice about Masa Yoshida, that I'm just thinking they're screaming and yelling to these other teams in Major League Baseball. I will say this. He looks good, Mike. He looks good hitting. I think he's a legitimate hitter. He could be a DH for someone. He just, for this team, because of the guy sitting in the DH position, I just don't think it's with the Red Sox.
Rob Bradford, WEEI.com, and the Baseball Isn't Boring podcast, joining us here, as he does every Thursday on Jones and Keefe, here on opening day on WEEI. You mentioned how Yoshida looks this spring. I know it's been limited looks at Rafael Devers. How would you say he looks?
He's okay. I mean, the times I've seen him play, and, you know, like, listen, his conditioning is what it is. You're going to see him. I think you have seen him. I think he ran down, and after I talked to you guys and took a video of him, you know, he's big, but he's not like Sandoval big. And I'm not talking Patrick Sandoval. I'm talking Pablo, of course. And he hits. He's hit in spring training. The thing is that I would be a couple things I'd be a little wary of when it comes to Devers is that he got so few at bats in spring training, and he can hit in the backfield and off the deck machine and all that stuff. It's baffling to me why he didn't get in more games, because games are games. That's what spring trainings are for. And the other thing is that how is he going to handle this DH thing? And I talked to him the other day, said, I'm just going to do my thing. I'm not going to change anything. I haven't asked advice from anybody, JD Martinez or David Ortiz or anything, but you don't know till you get there. Like, you don't know what it's like to, he's only DH 20. He started 20 games as a DH. So all these things, he might just come out and just start raking right away. But these are some of the things that if he doesn't rake, then we're going to point to and say, well, that wasn't right, and they should have adjusted it.
Is there a way for Roman Anthony and Marcelo Meyer to be up with the big club outside of injury to somebody in front of them?
Yeah, I mean, if someone stinks, I mean, if Abreu stinks, if Abreu isn't good, then, and he really, really struggles, kind of like he did last year at the beginning of the year, and they're like, hey, you know what? You know, you need more time in the minors or whatever it is, and Roman Anthony is tearing it up, then sure. I think for Marcelo Meyer, it's more of, it just comes down to, is Trevor Story or Bregman healthy? Those are the two spots that he can play. If they are healthy and they are producing, or not even if they're producing, if they're healthy, then he's going to stay in the minor leagues for now. It's still, guys, it is still baffling to me. I love spring training. You know, I love the chicken wings. Sure. I love the beach. Mm-hmm. I love it all. And so, but of all my time in spring training, one of the most baffling things was that day Marcelo Meyer. I think I talked to you guys the day after. Marcelo Meyer playing second base. I mean, we did the podcast with Breslow. I sat down with him, and I said, okay, you got to answer this for me. And he goes on about how he earned the right to be in the competition and blah, blah, blah. And I said, but it was a day. It was a day. And he didn't really have a response to it. It was weird. And yet, because that sort of him being in the competition came and went within a day. But he was, I think, by far the best guy of those three guys in spring training.
Well, yeah, and so speaking of that, I get your point on, you know, if Willie Abreu really struggles, maybe that's where Roman Anthony comes up. I didn't never consider Marcelo Meyer playing second base either. And so what if Christian Campbell gets off to a really slow start? And obviously he is hopefully the future of that position, and you don't want to run away from him too soon. But if it's a long, prolonged slump to start the year, and Marcelo Meyer is killing it at Worcester, even though he's doing it at shortstop, would there be any kind of thought of having him come up and take Campbell's spot?
I think they would be very hesitant to do it. They could do it, obviously, but you have to go through a lot of other checklists, right? You have to go through David Hamilton. You have to go through Vaughn Grissom, who's going to be playing second base in Worcester. And if neither one of those guys are impressing, And so if neither one of those guys are impressing, then, yeah, make the move. But the thing is that they want him, they want Marcelo Meyer as a fail-safe at shortstop. And Trevor Story has had a bad back the last, you know, couple weeks.
No.
That's a reminder. That's a reminder that you might need Marcelo Meyer at shortstop. So I'm not going to say no, but right now, you know, this is, we're looking if we do the Dustin Pedroia 2007 thing all over again, then David Hamilton would play the role of Alex Cora and get him and get Pedroia to the finish line or get Campbell to the finish line. I don't think Marcelo Meyer would be.
I was listening to Cora yesterday on WEEI Afternoons with Hart and Fitzy, and he gave what I thought an interesting answer about Tristan Casas. He was asked about Breslow's projections for him, 40 and 110 or whatever. And Cora's like, the guy's just got to play. Like, he's got to be out there. He's got to play. 150 games is the number. And if he plays that, the rest will take care of itself. I sensed a little Casas fatigue in that answer. Is he already a little worn out by the Tristan Casas experience? Or am I barking up the wrong tree?
I think it's cut and dry, not only with Cora, I think with basically everyone that follows the Red Sox. If he produces, great. You've got a great personality. He's a great teammate. You know, he's different, sure, but he's producing. But if you don't produce, then all this other stuff is like, it's just, it becomes a little less palatable, right? And, but, you know, so I think that Alex Cora is saying the obvious. We need this guy to produce. And so, for the team, but also just for the perception of Tristan Casas, I think I said it to you guys before. I don't know if there's a more polarizing athlete in Boston right now than Tristan Casas. I don't know, but that's why sort of this April is so important to him to sort of get that narrative back on track, not only with Cora but with everybody.
All right, so let's play this out. If Garrett Crochet goes six innings today and leaves the game with a lead, What is the ideal 7-8-9 for the bullpen?
I love it. Yep. Let's go back to 2013 when Koji, Andrew Miller, Andrew Bailey, was he in there? I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, might have been. Yes. Yeah.
So Tozawa, it was Koji, Andrew Miller.
Ruby De La Rosa.
Someone else is in there. Yeah, Ruby De La Rosa. Andrew, yeah. Alan Webster came in throwing a 99 and everyone freaked out. No, I think that you're going to have, here's my guess. As I said, I really like what Whitlock has been doing. No question about it. I think Whitlock gets in there. I think Slayton gets in there. If you, the first lefty probably maybe is Justin Miller. And then you have Chapman at the end. I don't know if they throw Hendricks out there today. I think, I think it's been that bad. I think, yeah, I mean, it just seems like he's still working his way back, you know? So, it hasn't been terrible, but it hasn't been the type of level that you say, oh, there's a high leverage guy. So, you know, I think in an ideal world, you sort of ease him back into things. But right now, if you, I love a good power ranking. If you get a power rank, who looked the best in spring training of relievers? It was Chapman. It was Whitlock. It was Slayton.
Is it fair to say it is kind of bullpen by committee? Cora gave an answer the other day where he's like, well, Chapman's been the best guy, but if Corey Seager's up in the eighth inning, he's going to come in the eighth. I mean, is it fair to say this is bullpen by committee?
Yeah, I mean, that's how baseball is right now, but you better have the guy who can come back in the ninth,
right? They weren't like that last year with Jans. Oh, I see what you're saying. Matching up beforehand and then, yeah, right.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's almost all bullpens have two guys now, right? So it's like the Yankees, they have Luke Weaver and Devin Williams. Like, you have these guys, but, you know, I think that ideally, but I will say this, Cora has said, like, he likes certainty. He likes routine. So why he said he might bring him in the eighth, I would think that he wouldn't want to wait for the ninth. And how long that dynamic lasts, it really depends on how many times you're going to go with watching Aroldis Chapman walk three guys before striking out the first. Because, you know, this is – he looks good, but, you know, he has a track record of not throwing strikes.
Last thing for you, Bradfo. This ended up being a pretty spirited debate last week on the show. Is the catcher a part of the infield?
Yes.
Is he?
Yeah.
Catcher.
Well, he's not part of the outfield.
Yeah, okay. That was my response. Catcher's an infielder.
But he is part of the battery. He's not an infielder. A catcher's not an infielder.
No, don't sway him. He already said yes.
Can you do both?
But
you
asked it in a misleading way, I feel like. Is a catcher an infielder?
All right, maybe I didn't ask it right, but I got the right answer.
Is outfielders part of the lineup? Yeah, you can be both.
You can be both. So it's like, they're in the lineup.
Bad point.
I hadn't thought of it.
This is why baseball's so great. Yay, baseball.
Baseball's right? Never boring with conversations like this.
No, it isn't.
All right, Bradfo, we appreciate it, even with your wrong answer. We'll talk to you next week.
As I said, it's your prerogative to be wrong. So there you go.
I am used to that. We'll talk to you next week. Enjoy opening day.
All right, thanks, guys. See you.
Bradfo joining us here every Thursday.